quest to follow that star. No matter how hopeless, no matter how far, to fight for the right without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest. And the world will be better for this, that one man scorned and covered with scars still strove with his last ounce of courage to reach the unreachable stars.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke program on the Rinse Radio Network, reaching the entire world with news and information vital for every people on this planet, because globalism is not just a threat to the citizens and the people of the United States or Canada or Europe or, for that matter, Australia or New Zealand, our European brothers and sisters around the world. It's a threat for every people on the planet. Whether you live in Nigeria or whether you live in Brazil, whether you live in Malaysia, whether you live in China, whether you live in any nation of the world, globalism is a real threat. And the truth is that on this planet, in the developed world, or the what we call the first world, there is an incredible effort to lessen the standard of living of people. People have less money to spend. They are less able to provide support for their families. They're less able to get a job. And today I want to focus, among other things, on some of the economic issues and why we have these economic issues that we do. I saw a headline. By the way, you can find some data on this at davidduke.com, which, you know, all my programs I talk about, I try to give you articles and give you some reference and some names where you can find the data, just as my books are footnoted extensively, 1,000 footnotes, over 1,000 in My Awakening, over 700 in Jewish Supremacism. And I think it's important that people can find your sources and they can check them out. And I think it's vital, really. So everything I say here today, some of the things I'm going to say here today are very shocking, but they need to be discussed. First off, the headline on one of the lead articles on my site is The Destruction of America's Economy. 51%. Now, this isn't just this year. This isn't just for the last 2 years. Of all those who graduated college since 2006, Americans. And by the way, this is a similar story, by the way, in Europe. And but I think America is like the epitome of the iceberg. The America is the most Jewish extremist-controlled country in the world. It's the one controlled most by the Zionist bankers. It's the one controlled most by the globalists. And it's so in tow to the globalists, and part of the economy of America is so much based on military expenditures, where the world's only superpower, that these things are affecting American economy and the American people more than they are the rest of the world. But of course, America has a tremendous ripple effect on the entire world. Anyway, of those who graduated from college since 2006, only 51% today have a full-time job. Now, that's according to a new study by Rutgers University. 11% are unemployed or not working at all. So 51% of our college graduates in the last 6 years, of all the college graduates in the last 6 years, only 51% have a full-time job. The situation is even more dire for those who have graduated since 2009. Fewer than half of the college graduates from those years found their first job within 12 months of graduating, much less than the 73% of those who graduated from 2006 to 2008. Now, those who graduated since 2009 are three times more likely to not have found a full-time job than those from the classes of 2006 through 2008. Amazing. Amazing. Carl Van Horn, he's a professor who directs Rutgers Heldrick Center and a co-author of the study, says the resilience of this year's and recent college graduates are being tested. Students who graduated during the past several years, this is Dr. Van Horn speaking, are facing historic obstacles in achieving the foundations of the American dream. Listen to this. It gets worse. Graduates since 2009, these are college graduates, earned an average salary of $27,000, down from $30,000 for the classes of 2006 and 2007. Of course, employers can pay their employees less. And the study shows that 43% of employed recent graduates said their jobs do not require college degrees. So now you have 50%, about 50% of college graduates can't find a job. Those that are finding a job, a good percentage of those, almost 43%, all right, are not working at jobs that require a college degree. Now, 55% graduate student loan debt averaging $20,000. And, of course, many have student loan debt that they've made no progress in paying it off. And, again, we must compare this to what's going on in Europe, by the way. Most university education in Europe is free. That is, you qualify by your studies, by your profura, your exams, your other qualification standards. It's a fair system. It's available to everyone in the academic system. And those that qualify basically have their college education. I mean, people think this is strange, but in Italy or Austria or Germany, most countries, even going to medical school is free, whereas a medical student in America might have an average loan of $125,000 or maybe $250,000 even today or more, because medical schools are so expensive in Europe. It's just not that way. Another interesting issue is this. You know, Americans often talk, and our European listeners are going to find this interesting. People often talk about the horrific tax rates in Europe and how much more taxes that Europeans pay than Americans. The truth is that Europeans pay more income tax than the average American in the United States, no question about it. But a lot of very low-income people in Europe pay almost no taxes. And everybody in Europe, no matter what their situation, employed or unemployed, is fully insured with health insurance. They don't have to worry about losing their home. And let's talk about some other taxes that people in America don't know about. And, you know, I know you've been taught, most Americans listening to this have been taught their entire lives that, oh, America is the best and we have more opportunity and we've got a better economic situation here than in Europe. Well, let's take a look at this. In America, tax of property, you know, property tax is unbelievable. And there are tens of millions of Americans who've worked hard all their lives and paid massive taxes into the government, supported often people who don't work and pay no taxes, illegal immigrants, a huge jail system, which is extremely expensive, housing more than 2 million people in the United States. And then we have older people retired on a fixed income, Social Security, whatever, and the taxes, just the local taxes, often to support the criminal element, a lot of people don't work. And also our governments, you know, because of the incredible robbery of the international banks and our incredible defense, so-called defense budget, they literally are forced out of their homes because they can't even afford the tax rates. I'll give an example. My old family home in New Orleans, who my father willed to me upon his death. He died actually when I was in the American Gulag. I had to borrow on it a bit because I had to pay for the publishing of my books, My Awakening, and the last edition of Jewish Supremacism. I owe a considerable amount of money in the house. And this house itself, it's maybe worth $160,000, $170,000. I owe about that much money on the house. The interest rate is decent. It's low. I rent the house out in New Orleans, and the renters pay about $1,100 a month for the house. Guess what? The property taxes this year were about $4,500. And I pay a fee for the real estate agent that finds the renters and keeps it rented. It's not rented all the time. We've had many situations where 5 or 6 months go without finding a renter. And then I have a good size house payment to make on the house. The house is kind of my retirement. But like right now, it is hurting my economic bottom line, even my ability to pay my own bills and survive. But this is not just me that's in this situation. So you take off, say you take $1,100 a month to rent the house, and then you take off the commission for the real estate agent, and then you take off the fixing up of the house, which is usually $1,000 or $2,000 a year to get it painted, the plumbing fixed, the appliances, whatever you might need. And then you find the house not rented sometimes. And basically, even without the payment, the house payment for the house, which most people have house payments for homes they own, even ones they are trying to pay off for their retirement, even those, this house, is not really making any money. It's even though it's my house. I mean, that's typical. And this is going on for people who are retired in America, and it's a pathetic reality of life for the United States of America. Now, what are our expenses? Well, the biggest part of our budget today. I mean, it's just amazing to think about it. Okay, what is the cost of government in the United States of America? Well, first of all, the biggest expenditures we've had over the last few years hasn't even been the Defense Department. It's been the bailout of the international banks. And if you look at the presidential campaign finance reports, both Republicans and Democrats, you'll find overwhelmingly the corporate bundled contributors of the international banks to be by far the largest single segment of any industrial part of the United States in terms of federal campaign expenditures. And guess what? The bailout of these international banks, orchestrated by the Federal Reserve, often done without even the right of people to vote on them in Congress. Some of it was just done by fiat, by Mr. Ben Shalom Bernanke. And by the way, I'm not making a joke or something calling him Shalom Bernanke. That's his real name, his real middle name. And according to the Treasury Department and the very Jewish, in fact, auditor of the bailout, this bailout is probably around – it's unbelievable to say this number. It doesn't sound real. But $23 trillion. People talk about big oil. They talk about big corporate financing and so forth in the United States. Big oil didn't lobby for the Iraq war or the Afghanistan war. Some of the, obviously, manufacturers lobby and support candidates that want to sell drones or sell missiles or planes. But that's a tiny part of the campaign financing. The biggest part of campaign financing in America is dominated by Jewish extremists, such as the biggest campaign contributor in this next election is going to be George Soros, an international Jewish banker, manipulator of money, basically European, but he's going to be the biggest impact in American politics, and a very devoted person, by the way, to Jewish interests and leftist interests. And then on the right, you have Sheldon Adelson. You have many others. You have the media mogul that usually goes hand in hand, the media mogul who is actually an Israeli citizen as well, who's one of the biggest financiers. In fact, Haaretz did an article on the three biggest financiers of American politics. Israel itself gets billions and billions of dollars from America, and even more, they are able to get us into these Israeli-driven wars, such as the Iraq war, such as the Afghanistan war. They're able to make people hate us and have attacks like 9/11 because of our policies in the Middle East and supporting the criminal state of Israel. So even above and beyond the billions and billions of dollars that we send to Israel, we're also facing what? We're facing trillions of dollars of costs in these crazy wars. We've had approximately now 400,000 American young men who faced traumatic brain injuries, and the cost of these, just the treatment, as they should get treatment, these veterans, these young men who valiantly have fought for what they thought was the interest of this country with a pure heart. When they were horribly deceased, treasonously deceived, because they were really fighting for Israel, not for America. this cost is going to be in the many trillions of dollars. If we weren't sending that money in these wars and spending this money and injuring and damaging and crippling our young men, we'd have enough money to pay for the university of every college student in this country, to help them take back these loans, which is insane to put people in debt slavery for the rest of their life just to get a college education. We'd have enough money to provide people with decent medical care. And we have many middle-class people in America who can't even afford to buy medical insurance. You know, it's not the most poor that is the ones being exploited here in the medical system, because if you're very poor and you have no property, you have no home, you can go in any public health hospital in the country. If you're a criminal in prison, and you can get top-notch medical care, you can get heart operations. I saw many illegal aliens in the gulag where I was in for 15 months go off and get $300,000 worth of heart surgeries. But if you're a taxpayer who's been working hard, have a small business, but you couldn't afford and you can't afford the health insurance, or you've had a previous condition in your life, so you couldn't get health insurance or couldn't afford health insurance, and you have a house, you're going to lose that house. You're going to lose your business. You're going to lose your economic ability, while people who paid nothing into the system for years and years are going to get plenty of it. Ladies and gentlemen, we have got to realize what's going on. And, you know, we talk about welfare. You know, I certainly am opposed to people living off the welfare system who are not willing to work, who are defrauding the system, who are on welfare, but they're using or abusing drugs, committing criminal acts, and all that. I'm certainly opposed to all that. That was one of my biggest campaign proposals during the campaigns about these kinds of issues, that those people shouldn't be getting welfare. If we drug test policemen and firemen and people on a job, maybe we should drug test welfare recipients. Why in the hell do you send your tax money to someone taking that money, not for a better health or a better situation for their children, but are using it on drugs? That's a disconnect to me. But you know what? What I've learned over the last few years is that it's not the low end of the welfare recipients that are the biggest problem. It's the high end of the welfare recipients, those people who are abusing the economic system on a massive scale. The Zionists who are getting us into these incredible, insane wars, the globalists who are expending American money for their projects around the world, the insane policies we have toward Israel and what that's cost us, an incredible amount. So that's how I wanted to start this show off, the little talk about the economy. And I'm bringing Guillermo Rudolph on now. He's waiting in the wings, and he's a very brilliant guy. I love his commentary and everything. Where it's interesting, we don't always agree on everything, but I tell you one thing, it's always a good discussion with us. And I think he's great to just bring on the discussion on this issue or any other thing he wants to bring up. But let's just start with the economy. He's a person who grew up in Europe. And, Gamera, I'd like you to start, if you would mind, and then I want you to comment on anything you might have heard in my opening statement here. Could you contrast some of the economic differences and some of the positives and negatives of the economy between the EU, Germany, where you're from, for instance, and the United States for our listeners, so they get an idea?
Yes, thank you first for having me in your show again. Well, you brought up a lot of topics that I like to comment on. You started with education, that it is very expensive in the United States, leaving students after they've graduated with a huge amount of debt. And you contrasted that to the situation in many European countries, where education is basically free beyond school into the college and university system. And that is certainly true to some degree. It used to be absolutely true. I remember when I went to university in the 80s, it was still completely free. You didn't have to pay anything. Now, that has a downside, too, because you get these eternal students who live off their parents or of government funding or of scholarships and whatever, and never graduate, or at least it takes them 15, 20, 30 years. So that's not a good thing. I think education should cost a little bit. So when students get out, they or when they're studying, they should have an incentive to hotfoot it, to learn well, to graduate quickly, and to become a productive member of society, because That's what society pays them for, to become mm-hmm. just that. But then again, the other extreme of the spectrum is the United States, where there is hardly any financial support when you go to college or university. Your parents have to pretty much pony up the money, unless you're a very bright, very good student, and you happen to get a scholarship.
Well, let me mention something. There's an exception to that. You know, they do have what they call Pell Grants in the United States. Now, most of European American students, in fact, there are a lot of poor whites too in America, but most of the minority students qualify for these Pell Grants, and they are given just straight grants. Now, one of my campaign policies was, when I ran for the U.S. Senate in the United States and in Louisiana for governor, my suggestion was this, that we should take all the money that we just give these grants for the low-income students, and what we should do is just basically give them interest-free loans. I mean, why can not a poor student, after he gets a degree, obviously, pay back a college loan any more than a middle-class student? Either way, they got to pay it back with their hard work. And we'll come back with this in just a second. That's our message. But that to me makes sense. What about no interest loans and making sure that those loans are reasonable and not, and these college costs are reasonable with some government funding? And that might give the incentive you need, but we're not doing that in the United States. So again, the hardworking people and the middle class people always seem to pay the piper in America. We'll be back in a second with more commentary from myself and from Guillermo Rudolph. Okay, folks, just a few moments.
Will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest, and the world will be better for this, that one man scorned and covered with scars still strove with his last ounce of courage to reach the unreachable stars.
Are you suffering from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeats, clogged arteries? If so, you are not alone. Millions of people are suffering from one or more of these problems. If you'd like to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then this might be the most important message you'll ever hear. An effective 100% organic nutritional supplement is now available. Heart and Body Extract is an exclusive formula of wild-crafted and organic herbs. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. Get your Heart and Body Extract today by visiting heartandbody.com or by calling 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305, or heartandbody.com.
If you're taking 1, 2, 5, or more nutritional supplements, please stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food supplement you can buy. Men, women, children, even Olympic athletes the world over have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. And now take just one nutritional supplement instead of many. The Bio Superfood formulas are whole food products composed with four of the most nutrient-dense algae found on Earth. Bio Superfood for the brain helps with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. If you can increase brain health, the rest of the body is a no-brainer. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity and is safe for you and your family. Learn more and order your Bio Superfood formulas at BioAge.com, spelled BioAge.com, BioAge.com, or call 877-288-9116. That's 877-288-9116. BioAge, the age of advanced organics.
Let's keep on looking for the light. Oh, can't you see the morning?
waiting right outside the storm. Why don't we cross the bridge together and find the place that's safe and warm? It's not too late. We should be giving.
Okay, folks, and we here at the Rinse Radio Network, and I certainly believe that it is not too late. I'm always sick and tired of the naysayers who say it's all over, but that's the kind of defeatism that will lead us to defeat. The truth is, I travel the world, I visit all over the world, I hear the voice of the people, and I believe that people are waking up more than ever. It's under the surface. It's not in the mainstream media, but let me tell you, people are waking up to the dangers of Zionism. They're waking up of the control of the media, and they're waking up that, and I think with the truth more and more, because the internet has so-called democratized media. This program democratizes media. It gives you a different point of view, and it gives you the place to find the sources. Years ago, when I would do something, or when Gammer Rudolph wrote something, it would go to a small handful of people. People have to write in for the report, the cost of printing and mailing and everything. And now when he does a report or does something important, people can get it instantly. They can get videos instantly. They can get these programs like this. It's just like we have a broadcasting station that goes all over the world through the internet, because anyone with internet anywhere on this planet can listen to this program. And so there's a democratization of media, and the truth is getting out slowly but surely. Before, and people had to judge David Duke or Gammer Rudolph for that matter, you had to go to the mainstream media. You'd have to read what Time Magazine had to say, or Stern or Spiegel or whatever. Today, if they want to hear about David Duke, they can go whatever, right, to the to Google. And they will get the anti-David Duke. They'll get the anti-Gammer Rudolph material from the ADL and the other groups, but they'll also get our side of the story. And I think when you weigh our side and their side, people will be able to see the truth. And they'll see also that what they say about us is not really very accurate. Now, back to the economy. And by the way, again, this program will be available in archives. And we're getting a tremendous response from the last program I did with Gammer Rudolph on the Holocaust, the new Holocaust religion. I think it's a fascinating show. It's available on archives. Go to davidduke.com and you can look it up. And also, we need to put on, and I'm going to tell my assistant back in, I have one right now in Louisiana, and we need to put on a link for Gamar's site right on my site at this moment. So if you're listening, buddy, put that up. Now let's go back to the economy for a second, and we got to realize that one third of the entire budget of the United States government, which is a huge bloated budget, by the way, is by the U.S. Defense Department. That amounts to about $1.2 trillion. And the truth is that if U.S. defense policy was just founded on protecting America's borders, as our first great president George Washington suggested, by the way, and most decent pro-American patriots have suggested, the budget could be cut by 75% without impairing the safety of the United States from foreign attack. And we could go further. You know, that amount of money is equivalent to the entire budget deficit. And, ladies and gentlemen, if we've been doing this for a few years rather than doing the bidding of Israel and the Zionist warmongers and globalists, if we've been doing this, we wouldn't even have a national debt in this country of any size. And we wouldn't be losing another quarter to a third of our budget just paying off the national debt. So that would be enough money to finance health care in America, be enough money to finance a decent education for kids. And why don't we have these sensible solutions? Instead of having Pell Grants, what we should do is just allow college-free loans and also some subsidization by the government of universities, and have a system in university based on merit and not how much money your daddy's got. You see, a lot of these rich people and some of these super rich elements – and we can go right back to the usual suspects again — they can afford these Ivy League colleges, whereas average people can't afford them. So they're not really necessarily based on simply the best qualified, but the people who can afford it. And they realize that if they do that funding, that also keeps it in their own house. It keeps them controlling the key mediators and the key leaders of media, government, law, and so forth in America, and keeps them ruling all of us. Okay, Gamera, we're back. Any thoughts?
Indeed. Yes. Let me tie in education into the bigger picture that you've just drawn. When we're talking about education, I think what people should be aware is what should be a nation's priority. Now, you've said that the biggest position in the U.S. budget is waging war, basically.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest, and almost everybody should be able to agree on this, the biggest priority of a nation should be the future, securing a good future for its people. And the most important investment you can make in that is a good education for the next coming generation, because that's the future. Now, from that point of view, the biggest budget point in a government should be education and not destruction. But in this country, unfortunately, it's the other way around. And I think also the way education, actually, from a very early point in most states of the United States, I have no statistics how many states do it, but education, school education in this country is funded in many states via property tax. And that's one of the reasons why the property taxes that you've mentioned too are so high. That means basically where people can afford high property taxes, that means the rich people, school get a lot of money and education is going to be good. So people who can already afford a good and expensive education get even more of it because they get it back via the property taxes they pay, whereas those who have need of more government funding because they are poor, they don't get it because they can't pay the property taxes. So I think the way in many states the system is rigged by having property taxes pay for education means basically it's what we call a plutocracy. You know, money rules. Those who can have money can get a good education already from kindergarten and school time onward, and those who can't, bad luck. And that's just not the way it should be. The government, all the way up, should get its taxes and then should use the tax money to redistribute the money they get to those who are in need of the money and see to it that everybody who can get a good education will get it.
And another thing we can point out, too, is that the whole system, too, is our educational system in this country is egalitarian. And it's so egalitarian that it really doesn't work very well. For instance, there's a lot of efforts in this country even to stop what they call tracking. They think tracking is discriminatory because tracking basically takes brighter students. They test students, and the students that are really doing well, studying hard, getting good grades, they try to put them in faster track classes. In America, there's a great deal of opposition to this, and there's a lot of resistance to this. And what that does is it hurts everybody. The slow student who's not being able to keep up with the class, if the class moves faster, they're left behind, they're lost, and they end up just daydreaming and not doing anything, dropping out of school and the rest of it. The middle are, you know, served okay, but then your extremely talented students that really want to learn and go forward, they get bored because the program's so slow. And also you have the disruptors in the class. You know, those kids that aren't making it, they're just going to be cracking jokes and causing disruptions, which destroys the ability for everybody to harm. This is one of the problems with American education. And like you say about the property tax, it's like, you know, property tax, it's kind of amazing too, because there's so much of property tax now, you know, and those people finance public education often in our major cities can't even use the education that they finance. The crime, the drugs, the destructive elements within that education, a kind of a Freudian Frankfurter school kind of ideology that dominates these educational processes. And they end up having a lot of middle class people end up, just for their children to be safe, have to actually finance a private education in addition to massive amounts of taxes funding the public education system.
Yeah, absolutely right. And well, I mean, you've brought up the issue of egalitarian school system. Of course, if you compare that with many systems you have in Europe, the continental ones, actually, the British is pretty similar to the American. They have multiple pronged school system, which where students get sorted according to their skills and their performances, which has downsides too, but it gives everyone the opportunity and the support they need. At least that's the idea behind it.
Yeah.
And the American, I would say, a monopoly school system that has just one way, one school for everybody, is of course rooted in a Supreme Court decision that ended the separation of the races. So
that's our music
decision then.
Right. Well, yeah. We'll talk about that. In fact, we'll talk about that a bit when we come back, and we'll also go into some other aspects of the economy. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in a couple minutes now with more of Gemma Rudolph.
This is David Duke again. I was wondering if you have seen yet my videos and documentaries. On my particular channel, I now have 4.5 million views. It's pretty amazing. But even more amazing is that hundreds of people have taken it upon their own initiative to take my lectures, my debates, my appearances, my broadcasts, and make videos out of them, independent videos. And now there are over 6,000 videos of my appearances and my work, well over 250 million views worldwide and growing. My videos have an average of over 90% positive ratings. Please go to my website, davidduke.com, and check out my videos, subscribe, and please tell your friends and relatives about this program. You and I together can change the world.
Remember this name, Carnivora. That's carnivora.com. What if I told you that this 100% pure and natural product was delivered directly to the White House at President Reagan's personal request at a time when only the president was able to obtain it? Reagan used this amazing product, Carnivora, successfully, a product derived only from nature that has the intelligence to instinctively attack abnormal cells only without harming a single normal cell, and the power to actually wake up critical immune cells from dormancy to attack foreign invaders that don't belong in our bodies. Carnivora is now obtainable by anyone who wants to get healthy and stay that way. Call 1-866-VENUS-FLY and protect yourself with 17 naturally occurring compounds that will unleash powerful immune defense. That's 1-866-VENUS-FLY. Call 1-866-VENUS-FLY and get your Carnivora today. Visit carnivora.com.
Hello, this is David Duke. I want to give you a free gift of an audio edition of my worldwide bestseller, My Awakening. This book is about awakening to the real world, exposing the lies of the Zionist-controlled media. Now, putting my 740-page book into audio was a huge task. It's the length of at least 10 typical audio books. But I promise it will keep you on the edge of your seat, and it's like a college education on these issues. To download the book completely free, you must use a file share program like uTorrent. Details are on my website. Or you can order the book on a DVD data disc for $20. I also have a beautiful hardback edition available at $35, the same price as Amazon, but ordering from my office helps us more, and you may value the fact that I personally autograph each copy. I guarantee that after you finish this book, you will never again see the world in the same way.
There must be something worth living for. There must be something worth trying for. Even something's worth dying for. And if one man can stand tall, there must be hope for us all. Somewhere, somewhere in the spirit of man, there has to be a way that we can restore.
Yes, folks, there has to be a way that we can restore to life the love that we have lost, the light that we have lost, the values that we've lost in this country. Now we're going to talk about something, and I want to bring up something that is very politically incorrect, and I have to kind of couch it in something. We are so programmed on race in the United States of America. I don't consider myself in any way a, quote, racist, in that I don't want to suppress anyone. In fact, I'm the opposite of that. I think every race has a right to preserve itself, has a right to run its own affairs, has a right not to be discriminated against or exploited by any other race, and no nation has the right to exploit or harm any other nation. This is the ethic that I believe in. I am often called a racist. Well, of course I am, by the mass media. But let's talk about something where I can show you and prove to those people, including those people listening in Europe who don't know much about this, because you always hear about racist America and what's the reality of it. You know, in America, we have these so-called Ivy League universities. We have Harvard, Yale, Princeton, a number of other schools. And if you graduate from Harvard, for instance, you've got a ticket, man. You've got a ticket to success in life. It's just amazing, the starting salaries of Harvard graduates. They are the leaders just about every aspect of our society. Now, I want to tell you about the reality of the representation at Harvard on the basis of race. First off, let's start by saying that European Americans are almost 70% of the population in the United States. And whatever the reasons for it, we're just going to take the reality of it. The reality is that white Americans score much higher on entrance examinations than most of the non-white groups, except for the Asian group. They score much higher than Mexicans and African Americans. And you can argue many different reasons for that, but that's the fact of the reality. Plus, they're 70% of the population. Now, you would think that the percentage, and the Jewish population, by the way, is less than 2% of the population in the United States. And you would think by those numbers, even if Jews were more intelligent on average than whites, some scientists actually say that they have an average higher intelligence, then 2%, let's say 2% is overrepresented, say they're overrepresented in higher intelligence by 50%, then maybe they should be 3% of the graduates or the students at Harvard. The truth is that white Americans who are 70% of the population and score much higher than the other two major population groups, African Americans and Mexican Americans. Guess what the European American percentage of Harvard is? It's about 22%. That's the leading university of the United States of America, the most important leading university of the country. Now, Jews who are less than 2% of the population, they represent about the same percentage as Harvard as the whites. Again, which is not... Again, the argument they would give is that they're simply more qualified, they're more capable. And there you go, ladies and gentlemen. So 70% of the population has 22% of the most important university, the leadership, where the leaders of America are coming from. That, my friends, is racial discrimination. It's hidden. It's not talked about by the New York Times. It's not talked about by the major networks. You hear about shopping discrimination against minorities, or they're being stopped by police and checked, you know, because they may think they're criminals where they have a higher criminality rate. But you don't even hear about massive discrimination in very key elements of life. I believe the best qualified person should get the job or promotion or scholarship on the basis of their ability. Gammer, your thoughts?
Hot topic. Well, yeah, first of all, you excluded the Jews from the white population and white European population. Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah, we divided it up because they've done some studies called the longitudinal study of youth, and also the data of the Hillel Foundation did this. If you suggest the whites are somewhere, and if there is argument about that, somewhere between 68, theoretically, by current census, and 72% of the population. If you suggest actually physically, they suggest Jews are about 1.5% of the population. They may be higher than that. But if it's 2%, it's still whites are about 70% of the population and Jews are about 2% of the population. So they're vastly overrepresented at Harvard. Many thousands of percentiles more than what 22. In fact, if they're 22 times more overrepresented, that's 22,000%. Of course, you know, I mean, it's 2,200%. So, I mean, that's a lot of difference there. So there's something going on. And what happens is, of course, the universities, like Harvard, is run by Jews. They hold most of the key positions. They control most of the academic departments. They make a lot of decisions on who to accept. Their decision boards have done it. Also, the Jewish population has much more money, and so those that have to pay their way into Harvard, it's much easier for Jewish wealthy populations to pay their way into Harvard. And that's how the system works. It's certainly not based simply on the abilities or test scores.
Yeah, that's the pinnacle of education. And you have that already in the school system. We have only a one-path public school system in the United States. And if you don't like that, you want better education for the kids, you can always pay for it, bringing them to private school, which is horrendously expensive for the most part. And only a few can afford that. So the selection process already starts there. It's, again, a country that often speaks of democracy. It's plutocracy. Money rules this country and nothing else. And you see that already with the foreign policy, or in general, as you initially said, who spends most of the money for politics? It's a few personalities, a few groups that hold the biggest financial stranglehold on basically all major public candidates in this country. And you see it again when it comes to economy. The United States more and more turns into a pure economy of warfare. The only part of the budget that really sticks out, as you mentioned, is the attack department. I don't call it defense department anymore because it's a joke. And if you look at the section of the gross domestic product that is in the meantime used for by the attack industry, that amounts, if you take all the hidden costs, not just the budget, the official budget, but black budgets for all the security services that have completely mushroomed out of control, you end up with something like 15 to 20% of the entire gross domestic product, which is used for mass murder and destruction. And this is exactly the same path the United States is going down, which the USSR, the former Soviet Union, has gone down, and it will end up with the very same fate if there is no radical turnaround.
Absolutely. I think that's a very good point. I tell you what we're going to do. I mean, I don't know if you – I think you're available tomorrow. I think you told me. We got a couple more minutes of the program today, but I'd like to go more into the economy tomorrow. Tomorrow I'd like to discuss insourcing, outsourcing, trade policies, and this type of thing with the third world, how that's affecting the economy, one reason why college graduates can't get a job in America, and how that's affecting Europe. I also want to talk with you tomorrow about the relationship between America and Europe and how the economy is suffering. And we talked about some about the we could talk about this too for the last couple of minutes. Not only is the war policy that we have a direct cost, like $1.2 trillion in costs, how much has it cost us, for instance, in higher oil prices? How much has that cost us when the Iraq war ran up, when the oil went to almost $200 a barrel or $160 a barrel? What did that cost us in terms of money? Trillions of dollars, certainly, worldwide. So the cost of this Zionist control of our policy goes way beyond simply the defense policy. It goes way beyond simply the international banks and these bailouts. It also goes into other aspects, such as our resources that we're dealing with. And we'll talk about that more in depth tomorrow as well. But this is kind of amazing. Also, I want to say, and I want to make this clear because this is so important to say, I really, years ago, Gammer, I was really more focused on the welfare costs, very resentful of the welfare costs of those who are not willing to work and hardworking people paying for people who weren't willing to work and the social welfare budget, which has gone totally out of control in the United States of America. And now I realize there are many, many areas there, and I'm still a very strong welfare reformer. But the truth is I've realized that the biggest problem is not welfare for the poor in the United States. It's welfare for the rich, for the powerful forces that exist. That's where the real theft is going on, and that's something that the most dedicated so-called right-winger or conservative has got to start to realize in the United States. And by the way, these big corporations, that's not free enterprise. It's basically where they get the government controlled. They decide what the government's going to do. Are they able to squash competition through monopolization and other aspects of controlling the regulation? It's not really even free competition. It's not even free enterprise. It's more of a manipulation by the most powerful forces. So I'm much more of a populist than I am a conservative these days.
Yes, and I would say, if I look, you know, there's this saying that says, if you have a small loan, it's your problem. If you have a real big loan, it's the bank's problem. And that's where these big corporations are in. They, when they get in real trouble, they have huge loans with the banks or with the nation, so to say, quote unquote. And if they get in trouble, then they can claim the banks are in trouble or the nation is in trouble and they have to bail them out. And we have these huge bank bailouts, of course, three years ago now. And that is what you said. That's welfare for the rich. That's basically what it was. Because they have a Samson politics. The rich say, well, if we go down, the whole thing comes crashing down, so you better help us.
Yeah, and the banks and this bank robbery, I mean, the Federal Reserve robbery of the people, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the robbery that they commit of European nations. And by the way, they've just about bankrupted most of the economies of Europe. They're bankrupting our economy. This is a problem not just for European Americans. It's a problem for African Americans. It's a problem for every group, Mexican American, every kind of the American population. And that's true for all the people of the world. We've got to realize there's a common enemy for humanity, and we've got to start to deal with it, confront it, and develop systems of revolution and change to depose this absolutely autocratic and plutocratic power that exists in the world. Thanks so much for being on with us today, Gameron, and I'm looking forward to tomorrow. You can look up some of the articles on the economy, and we'll go into some more of your theories and thoughts on the economy in tomorrow's show. It's been such a good show today. Everybody, we'll be back tomorrow with Gameron Rudolph, going deeper into the American economy and the world economy and the problems that we face and possible solutions. Thanks so much. Thanks, Gamer.
Thank you.
This is David Duke again. I was wondering if you have seen yet my videos and documentaries. On my particular channel, I now have 4.5 million views. It's pretty amazing. But even more amazing is that hundreds of people have taken it upon their own initiative to take my lectures, my debates, my appearances, my broadcasts, and make videos out of them, independent videos. And now there are over 6,000 videos of my appearances and my work, well over 250 million views worldwide and growing. My videos have an average of over 90% positive ratings. Please go to my website, davidduke.com, and check out my videos, subscribe, and please tell your friends and relatives about this program. You and I together can change the world.
When it comes to silver and gold investing, you have to go with somebody you trust, somebody who understands financial planning, economics, and history. In the late 1990s, Paul Drochten predicted that gold and silver would be the number one growth investment opportunity of the future, and he was right on the mark. Paul began helping his clients and friends make the conversion, and instead of losing money, they have all realized returns as high as 300%. Paul Drochten is now forecasting massive returns on gold and silver bullion in the coming months. Paul's foresight and vision were 2020, and his track record is perfect. You can email him at pdrockton@aol.com. That's Drockton, D-R-O-C-K-T-O-N. And let Paul help you. There is still time. So email Paul for a completely free, no-strings consultation at pdrockton@aol.com.